everybody needs to get some type of term policy where they can protect themselves, that if something happens, the family gets funded some type of death benefit if something does occur. Now, unfortunately, 99% of them just don't ever get recall. I mean, they're just never used. Hello and welcome to the Happy Money Podcast. We're your co-hosts, Michael and Gino Barbaro, co-founders of Barbaro 360. And on today's episode, we want to focus on what we agree with when we talk about Dave Ramsey. And I think the title of the show, Michael, should be, Let's Not Throw Out the Baby with the Bathwater.
It's funny. I heard that just right now, and I'm like, who the heck would have thought of that and written it down? And I was like, this is what we're going to use for hundreds of years. You know what I mean? But here we are.
Well, it's interesting. I don't agree with Dave Ramsey on a lot of things, but I do agree with him on several things. So the whole concept to me is really important, because you don't just get rid of somebody's ideas just because you don't agree with a few of them. There may be some that really serve you well. And as you grow in time, there may be others that serve you even better. So don't discount somebody's opinions or ideas just because you don't agree with them 100%.
That's life. Like, you're going to take ideas from this person. You're going to take ideas from this person. And then you have to figure out what's best for me.
Mm-hmm.
And if all of Dave Ramsey is best for you, great. And if none of Dave Ramsey is best for you, then that's great.
I remember when I introduced you to Dave Ramsey, I pushed you into going to the financial coaching with Dave Ramsey. Can you talk about that for a second? Was I a little bit of an overbearing father when I did that? Were you like, Dad, why are you making me do this?
Yeah, I'll just say that. Yeah. But it's okay, because we're here now. We're doing a podcast on it, so it works out.
Did you enjoy going through the training with Dave Ramsey?
Yeah, so it was good. One of the things that I see with coaching is, I did the coaching program and I went through another one years ago. And in order to get certified, you needed a mandate coaching clients. So I had to present two clients. I had to get documentation, transcripts from them, and all this stuff. And Dave Ramsey's program did not have that.
Oh.
And so I think that was interesting how you can go through the entire program without coaching people. And that was an option. Mm. It was highly encouraged, but there was something there that just didn't sit well with me.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you go back a couple episodes, we talked about, you know, what we disagreed with on Dave Ramsey, and there's a lot of stuff. But this one, let's just focus on some of his principles, some of his ideas that really should resonate with most people in this country. Start off, what do you agree with?
So I like how he's very much save oriented, in the sense of, if you don't put money aside, it's just going to do something, right? And so his principle is, every dollar, let's assign every dollar to something, and it's going to do that thing this month. And so there's even a section for spending. Okay, 10% is going towards spending. Now you have to spend 10%. You can't just say that. You can't just invest that. This is for this purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not for this purpose, it's going to go somewhere else. And oftentimes, that's a place where we don't want it to.
We're going to do a future episode called The Baby Money Soldiers. We wrote a book on that, and that's the ideal. Every dollar that you have has to be allocated somewhere. And the second one that I really agree with on Dave Ramsey is budgeting. I remember for many years, Mike, we really didn't budget in the house. I had a really great idea of the money was coming in and the money that was coming out. So I had budgeting in my head. We didn't have credit cards. We dealt a lot in the cash world. So I knew exactly what was coming in and what was coming out. But I remember when we started switching to credit cards, I didn't have a good control, a good grasp. And I do remember reading Dave's book and him saying that once you start the budget process, you're going to save between 15 and 20% of your money if and when you start understanding where the money is going. Benjamin Franklin says it best, even a big ship will sink even with the tiniest hole in that ship. And that's what ends up happening when you budget. If there's any holes in your budget, money starts leaking out. And that's what I love about the whole budgeting process. It's black and white right then and there. I would love to call it a spending plan, not a budget plan, but I think it's such a great concept that he has, and he really sticks to it.
And it's easy now because there's everything. You have every option for a budget. Like, I just downloaded Rocket Money the other month, and it's cool because it connects to your bank account and you see every single charge. And if there is, I transfer money in between accounts. And so I get to see that as well. I get to see all the expenses. I get to see all the income, and then you get to allocate what goes where. And so it's great because, again, you know where it's going, and it's not a subjective opinion. It's either your money's either there or it's not. You can't just be like, oh, I feel like doing this. It's like, no, it's already done.
You remember the first time we had the budget here in Florida, my infamous story? With putting it on, we use Dave Ramsey's tool, Every Dollar. And I remember running the budget here because we moved to Florida and I didn't understand why our grocery bills were so high. We have Publix right across the street. We run the Publix.
The Publix just opened.
That's right. And every day, and I'm getting like a little like heart palpitations. I'm getting a little nervous because it's so easy to go across the street. But I remember having that budgeting bill and like having $3,000. And I remember like towards the end of the month, you're like, Dad, we went above the budget. And your mom's in the background going, what do you mean we went over the budget? And I just was wondering why we were spending so much money on groceries. And that led us to go to Costco. That led me to go start shopping at Walmart. And that's the idea, is just to be able to control where you spend your money. And if you think you're spending it too much somewhere, you can allocate those resources elsewhere.
And if you think you're spending too much, you're definitely spending too much. That's exactly right.
I love that. If you think you're spending too much, you're probably right.
Yes. Well, even there was one of the guys that you used to work with. He had a great, he was more of a life coach than a finance coach. He had a metric for, you know, how angry does this make you feel on a scale of 1 to 10. And if you said, oh, a 5 or a 6, he would say, you're probably an 8 or 9. You just don't know it. And so it's the same logic applies to you. If you think you're spending $1,000, you're probably spending $1,500.
And that's why when you do the budget, you'll see that pop out, you know?
Yes.
What's the next thing? What else do you agree with Dave on?
So I like how there is this idea of controlling your expenses. And he uses the term keeping it with the Joneses, which is, you know, ironic because it's a mindset thing. It's not a money thing. And so when you get into the habit of keeping up with everybody else, it does not matter how much money you're going to make, $50,000, $100,000, $200,000, you're never going to be happy, and you're always going to spend more than you make.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, from what I remember reading, 30% of Americans who make 6 figures are living paycheck to paycheck. And for anyone listening, you can go look that up yourself and see if I'm right. Hopefully I'm right. Mm-hmm. But again, it's the idea of, you know, you're making 6 figures, you're living paycheck to paycheck, something's not going right. It's a keeping up the Joneses problem, and it's a budgeting problem, and it's a mentality problem, right? So how do we solve that part? And then we can focus on.
It's interesting. That's why your mom and I became certified money coaches, because money really isn't the problem. The problem is it's a symptom, right? It's something that's going on in your life, really, usually mentally or emotionally. And if you can tap into that and say, well, why do I care what the Joneses are doing? Why don't I take care of my own financial house? And you have to go back to your patterns, your behaviors, your beliefs of what happened when you were a child. Bring them up to today, because it's going to be really hard to create a budget, Mike, when all of a sudden you're saying to yourself, well, Michael's got a nice shirt today. I need to buy that shirt. But if I can't afford to buy the shirt and I'm going to go into debt to buy the shirt, you're really harming your financial future. But people don't understand why they need to keep up with the Joneses. And it's important for you to go back and do some of that work.
Well, it's also the principle of, you know, if somebody sees what I have, then that'd be great. But then we forget, you know, the stuff is for us, right? If you drive a $200,000 car with the intention of having everyone see it, what's the point of the car? The car is for you to enjoy.
Yes.
And if you don't enjoy it and you're just like, I just want everyone else to see it, okay, maybe you shouldn't have that car then, right?
I love that. That's great. This next one is pretty interesting.
You dovetailed
it perfectly into it. The car loans. Talk about cars and car loans, because I know Dave is a stickler to go out, buy the cheapest car possible, not have a car loan. And Mike, I can honestly say in my entire life, I have never, ever had a car payment. I've owned probably over a dozen cars, even for you. I never wanted to go out and borrow money to buy a car. And even when I was down and I wasn't making a lot of money, I actually got cars from my mom. Grandma Ivana actually gave me one of her cars. And Grandpa Vito, when he passed away, I took his car as well. So I didn't have the money to go out and buy the car at the time, but I didn't want to go out and borrow money for a car to make a car payment. So I took secondhand cars, and I bridged the gap for us for about 6 or 7 years where I had no car payments. And it really helped me to be able to save that money that was going to go to a depreciating asset. Mm-hmm. I was able to save that money.
I hate car loans. I think car loans are one of the dumbest things that we've set up our system to do, because again, like you said, you're paying between $300 and $900 a month for a depreciating asset. Your asset is going down in value and you're still paying interest on that.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem again is the average car loan is like $500 a month. Again, something you guys can go check out as well. But again, it's like $500 a month. It's crazy when you think about it, right? Because it's like, where could that money be going? And how much is the car worth? That's number one. Now cars are getting to be more expensive. I know you can buy a Hyundai for $60,000. Think about that for a second, right?
A Hyundai.
A Hyundai for $60,000, you're spending $700 a month on a Hyundai. Mm-hmm. You know, if you get a 2-bedroom apartment for $1,400 a month and you get a roommate, that's rent.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we put into that mentality, it's like we see how much we're spending.
And it's interesting. What I would say to anybody out there, maybe go buy a secondhand car, maybe buy something that's a little bit cheaper. Maybe try to get the most inexpensive car payment that you can. A couple $100 a month is reasonable.
It's more reasonable. It's
doable.
Yes.
Yeah. But if you're lending where you have $1,000 a month for your car, then you have $2,000 a month for your rent, then you have cell phone, then you have Wi-Fi, then you have all your subscriptions, you can see why six figures really doesn't amount to much once you start piling up and not controlling those expenses.
No, and it's also about, you know, the more you make, the more you spend kind of thing. When you make six figures, you feel obligated to buy a nice car. And so, of course, there's going to be this idea of I don't have enough money left over to save, right? Paycheck mm-hmm. to paycheck.
It's interesting. This next one, Michael, is so challenging and difficult for me because I am a big proponent of whole life insurance. I love whole life for certain reasons. It's more for long term. It's more for estate planning. It's more for an opportunity cost. It's more to protect my assets. I have money in there. It's not correlated to any other, you know, investment because it isn't. It's an asset. Now, is it cost more than term? Absolutely. But
it's a lot more than term.
It is. But I do agree with Dave Ramsey when he talks about term life insurance, where for the majority of Americans, it does make sense, especially when you're young and you can't afford to fund the whole life policy. Unfortunately, when you're young, whole life is a lot cheaper. It's a lot less expensive because your mortality when you're young, it's just so much more.
You have a less chance of dying.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's cheaper. But I do agree with him. Everybody needs to get some type of term policy where they can protect themselves that if something happens, the family gets funded some type of death benefit if something does occur. Now, unfortunately, 99% of them just don't ever get recall. I mean, they're just never used, which is great. But at the same time, that's why I like whole life. The money's going in there and I keep a specific amount of, you know, a premium every year for the rest of that policy. Premium doesn't go up. Your death benefit does tick up a little bit and I do have cash value, but term is great for the vast majority of people in this country.
Yeah, it's interesting. I always get torn between these two because on one hand, like you said, whole life is significantly more expensive. And in my mind, when I hear insurance, I don't think asset in the traditional sense of this is going to fund, you know, an investment or whatever. I think insurance, hey, when you die, you get money. Now, obviously, it's an asset in the sense of you're getting money, but I don't think of it as, you know, this is going to fund other investments. And so I guess with that, what are some reasons you use it for?
I've been trying to get you on board with this.
I'm still trying to get your whole life policy.
Well, actually, I have one on all the kids. And for me, it's a great way to save. I put the money aside. The money grows guaranteed minimum 4%. It takes a few years for it to catch up, just like any other business. I look at it as you're funding a business and it's sitting there. And if something ever happens, I can tap into the cash value. That's the great part about it. So for me, it serves many more purposes than just putting money aside because eventually it will help fund the estate. If I have any estate taxes, the kids will be able to use the cash value or the death benefit from that policy. I've been trying to get you on board and eventually I think I will.
You were saying the growth rate is 4% a year?
On average, it yields okay. 4%. Yeah. And it's guaranteed and it's non-correlated. So if the stock market goes up, goes down, whole life policy has nothing to do with it, which is great.
So I feel like even with that, you know, stock market, let's say the S&P goes up 10% a year, you know, that's a 6% difference on average year over year. And even if the stock market does 12 one year and
minus 20 next year, you have to look at it
in
its totality.
But even that idea, the long-term market of the S&P has always gone up, right?
Yes.
And so to me, it doesn't seem like it's justified that 4% in the sense of if we're looking at this as a long-term play, the trajectory of the S&P has always been up.
Well, remember one thing. Let's say you need to cash out of your stocks tomorrow and the market's down 30%. It's all about timing. When people were going to retire back in 08, all of a sudden they've got money in the stock market. Stock market's down 30%. They need it to sell. That's part of the problem. The money is tied up in the stock market there. So they have to sell at that point when the market's low. It's good to look at tables and try to estimate 10 years out and I'm going to get 8% a year. That's not what this vehicle is all about. This vehicle here is just having it as a side. It's having money set aside that if an opportunity comes up, you can borrow money from the life insurance policy and your money is continuing to earn uninterrupted. So you're taking a loan from the life insurance company. It's the life insurance company is using your cash value as collateral. So if I borrow money from that whole life policy, and I just did this 6 months ago, and I put that money into a real estate deal. Now I've got money into the real estate deal, and I still have money in the whole life policy. Now, when that real estate deal pays off and I make money from that real estate deal, I go back and I pay the loan back. Now, guess what? I've got the real estate deal and I've got the whole life policy. Now, it's an advanced strategy.
With that, can you just borrow against your stocks as well?
But let's say your stocks are down 30%, or let's say you don't want to sell stocks.
No, borrow against them.
I guess you could. I don't want to get into margin calls with stocks, because if you borrow from your stocks and you get margin calls and drops, you're in big trouble. But remember, once again, the whole life policy is there for the death benefit as well. All right. It's that's a big component of it.
Yes, but if you also cash out money with the policy and you die, that money's not included. So if your death benefit is 1.5 and you pull out $750,000.
That's right.
Okay. Well, now the money.
The death benefit's only $750,000. You get an additional $750,000. Pretty cool.
I would have said an additional, but.
Well, yeah. But what I'm saying is the loan there was $750,000, and then you have an additional $750,000, and that's your $1.5 million death benefit. That money's used somewhere. That cash value is used somewhere. That may be a retirement fee when I get older and I have $1 million in my cash value. I can take out $50,000 or $60,000 a loan against it and never repay that loan. And then when I ultimately pass away, the remainder between the cash value and the death benefit. That's why it's long-term, and that's why it's not an investment. It's an asset.
Okay. I'm going to move on because we're going to be here for like 20 minutes. I see mom's laughing over here, like, get off insurance.
Well, listen, I do agree with him. That term works for the vast majority of Americans.
Yeah. What's our next topic?
The next one is, I love what you wrote here. Investing is how we keep winning. You want to dive into that real quick? That's what Dave Ramsey says.
So kind of like with that, eventually, you know, the more money we put aside, the more money that's going to be there in the future. And a lot of people are not doing this, and they're 65, 70 years old, and they don't have anything to their name. And so now they have to keep working, and now they can't retire. You know, the way we win in life is we get to a place in our life where we don't have to work anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can figure out how to structure that in a way where once we're 65, 70, we have enough put aside for us, okay, now we can enjoy the rest of our lives without having to work when we can't work,
mm-hmm.
right?
Do you think it's hard for a lot of people when they think to themselves, well, I only have $50 left at the end of the week or the end of the month? It's not going to really make a difference.
$50 a week goes a long way. That's $200 a month, $2,400 a year. Hopefully I did that right in my head on a podcast.
You got it.
Okay. And so every year, you know, accumulating interest, it's got to add up over time. And it's not going to be just $50 a week all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we're going to get to a place in our life where, hey, that's not enough for the long term. It's going to add up eventually, yes. But then the mindset starts to change to, how can I get this to 100? How can I get this to 150? How can I get this to 200?
You hope it does. That's the idea, not keeping up with the Joneses. Because as you earn more money, hopefully your lifestyle will not grow with the paycheck or the amount of money you're making.
Yes. And it's very simple. Ramsey's thing is very simple. And this is why he's been so successful. The way you make more money is you either make more money or the second one is you spend less things, you buy less things. And it's very simple, right? It's if you're spending, if you got five subscriptions or you're spending $10 on coffee a day, okay, how do we take that down to where we're making coffee at home? We have one streaming service and that money goes towards investing.
Mm-hmm.
Because right there, $10 a day, that's $50 a week in coffee.
Do you remember when I asked you to invest in our real estate deals when you didn't buy the amp and it wasn't a ton of money? But it was $3,000. What did you think in your mind? Well, how can I make money with just investing $3,000? What was going through your mind back then?
So it was $5,000 and I had 1%, and I'm thinking 1%, okay, 1% is not a lot. But then you start to put some zeros at the end of owner draws and contributions and selling and refinances, and then it starts to make more sense. It doesn't make sense at first until you start seeing checks come in the mail.
Hmm. How did I convince you to invest the money?
Well, I was 16, so I kind of had to do it, right?
Did you have to do it?
I think I did.
Well, wasn't that one of the best financial decisions
Absolutely.
Of your life?
Absolutely.
So for anybody sitting there right now and saying, you know, I only have $5,000 to invest. I mean, how big of a difference can that make? What would you say to them?
Go for it and see what happens, right? Because there's going to be this thing of like, should I or shouldn't I? And you're never going to know until you do it. Okay, whether that's in a business, even investing yourself. This is one I hear all the time. People will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on college a year, and they won't, you know, they won't take care of their bodies. They won't take care of themselves. They won't educate themselves further. So, you know, when it comes down to that, learning new skills, that's another contribution towards investing, mm-hmm. because that leads to different income paths as well.
I would say, Michael, one of the biggest things that you got out of that whole experience, other than increasing your net worth a thousandfold, was your language becomes your experience. All of a sudden, you've got skin in the game. If you put money into an investment, you start watching that investment. You start learning about that investment. You start getting excited about that investment. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you just said owner draws. Just, you know, you start learning about what occupancy is. Mm-hmm. You start learning about real estate, and it gets to be exciting. And all of a sudden, you build a habit. And the habit is, well, I just made money. I'm going to go out and buy something. No, the habit becomes, oh, I just made some money. Let me put some money aside to invest, like you just said right now, and let me go out and enjoy the rest of it. And that's the habit that you start building when you start investing some of your money.
Yeah. And part of money is too, you know, you got to enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, first is obviously paying your bills. And once we get to a place we have enough for investing and all this stuff, now we have to enjoy it.
Yes.
Because if we don't, then it kind of just gets boring.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we have to give. And that's one of the big things.
This last one, before we wrap up, you have the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil.
So this is interesting because, again, the mindset goes from, hey, this is all just for me and not for, this is for our communities and for others, right?
Yes.
So it's not socialism. I'm not promoting that, but I'm promoting generosity out of the love that, you know, Christ gives us, right? Mm. So how do we incorporate that into a lifestyle, right?
So would you say you want money to create impact for others?
Money to create impact for others. Tell me more.
Being generous. You know, when you're looking at money, I always say to people, money doesn't corrupt an individual. It just reveals that individual.
Amplifies. Yeah.
So if you're making more money, it's great. You want to invest that money. You want to save that money. You want to enjoy that money, but you also want to be charitable. And I think Dave really highlights that when he talks about in his books and in his teachings, he puts charity at a high point where he actually says, we got to invest, we got to save, and we got to give.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important component with money, that you want to make your money work harder, but you also want to make your money impact other people's lives.
And that's a big thing too. A lot of people will put 10% at least for charities. And so there's always this mindset of, hey, whatever we make, we got to give back, because we're fortunate enough to say, hey, we have enough, you know, let's help out someone who can't help themselves.
That's awesome. Any final thoughts before we sign off?
Very simply, just always spend less than you make, because when you don't do that, you know, that's kind of where best stuff happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So learning to budget, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
And learning to enjoy money in a way where it doesn't corrupt us, it doesn't make us, you know, puff up on our pride or anything like that, but enjoying it in such a way that allows us to use what money was meant to be used for, mm-hmm. which is ourselves and others.
Mm-hmm. This has been awesome. Listen, I agree with you in so many areas. I'm so glad that you went through Dave Ramsey's program. I'm so glad that we didn't throw out the baby with the bathwater, Mike. Thanks for tuning in to the Happy Money Podcast. We're your hosts, Michael and Gino Barbaro, and we'll see you on next week's episode.